we think our perspective is good, and I should be able to listen to that, think about whether I agree with you or not. And if I find the parts of what you say that I agree with, because very rarely are people 180 degrees out.
This thing on? Yeah? All right. Okay, let's go. Episode, let's see, number 136 of Future Proof. Thanks for being here. I'm Bill Sheridan. Can you hear me okay? Do I sound okay? I hope so. I may not sound quite as okay the next time you hear me. I'm recording this the day before I have surgery, oral surgery to be exact. Oral surgery, man, yuck. Man, those two words, those are two words that just should not go together, you know? I mean, I'm one of those guys who just the thought of going to the dentist fills me with angst, right? All I have to do is sit down in that chair, and it could be for nothing more than a checkup, right? A regular 6-month checkup, and I'll sit down and just clench up and start sweating, just expecting it to be painful. And I guess because I'm expecting it, right, it usually is. And now I'm going in tomorrow, not to the dentist, but to an oral surgeon, and they're gonna open up my mouth and just start cutting and scraping and yanking and God knows what else with really sharp things too. They're gonna be doing this stuff with really sharp things, and yeah, it ain't gonna be fun, folks. But the good news is they're gonna put me to sleep for this stuff, so I'm not gonna feel anything until afterwards, and then I'm going to feel like crap. But hopefully, over the long run, this is all going to be good. I was in an accident back when I was in college, years and years ago, and over time, some stuff's been going on in there, some not very good stuff, and you know, they got to get in there and fix it. So that's what my Monday is going to be like. How's yours shaping up? Better than that, I hope. Anyway. The next time you hear me, I might still be dealing with the aftermath of some of that stuff. So I don't know, maybe if you're lucky, I'll post some photos in the show notes. Okay. How about that? Sound good? All right. Let's talk about something else, shall we? How about this? This week's episode is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. Okay, so moving on. Thank God. This week's show, we're going to be talking about strategic thinking, critical thinking, let's call it strategic leadership. How about that? We've talked in past episodes about the very idea of leadership and how it's changing thanks to, you know, a slew of other changes, things like new technologies and automation, demographics, societal shifts, all of these things and more. They're all ganging up and joining forces to change, I think, what it means to be a leader. It's not about command and control anymore. It's about collaboration and connections and relationships and innovation and building a strategic mindset, right? Not just within ourselves, but throughout our organizations. And of course, that all means that leaders who want to thrive going forward have got to master a bunch of new skills. And they might include things like these. These are from an article titled 10 Principles of Strategic Leadership. It appears on the Strategy Plus Business website, written by Jessica Leach, David Lansfield, and Mark Dawson. And they say today's leaders have to master these 10 principles going forward. And here I'm quoting directly from their article. So those principles are, number one, distribute responsibility. Strategic leaders gain their skill through practice, and practice requires a fair amount of autonomy. Top leaders should push power downward across the organization, empowering people at all levels to make decisions. Number two, be honest and open about information. Transparency fosters conversation about the meaning of information and the improvement of everyday practices. If productivity figures suddenly go down, for example, that could be an opportunity to implement change. Coming to a better understanding of the problem might be a team effort. It requires people to talk openly and honestly about the data. If information is concealed, temptation grows to manipulate the data to make it look better. Principle number three, create multiple paths for raising and testing ideas. Developing and presenting ideas is a key skill for strategic leaders. Even more important is the ability to connect their ideas to the way the enterprise creates value. By setting up ways for people to bring their innovative thinking to the surface, you can help them learn to make the most of their own creativity. Number four, make it safe to fail. You must enshrine acceptance of failure and willingness to admit failure early in the practices and processes of the company, including the appraisal and promotion processes. Number five, provide access to other strategists. Give potential strategic leaders the opportunity to meet and work with their peers across the organization. Otherwise, they remain hidden from one another and may feel isolated or alone. Principle number six here, develop opportunities for experience-based learning. The vast amount of professional leadership development is informative as opposed to experiential. And although traditional leadership training can develop good managerial skills, strategists need experience to live up to their potential. Number seven, hire for transformation. Hiring decisions should be based on careful considerations of capabilities and experiences and should aim for diversity to overcome the natural tendency of managers to select people much like themselves. Number eight, bring your whole self to work. So this one says strategic leaders understand that to tackle the most demanding situations and problems, they need to draw on everything they have learned in their lives. They want to tap into their full set of capabilities, interests, experiences, and passions to come up with innovative solutions. Number nine, find time to reflect. This is a big one. Reflection helps you learn from your mistakes, but it can also give you time to figure out the value of your aspirations and whether you can raise them higher. Managers are often caught up in the pressures of the moment. A mistake or a high-pressure project can feel overwhelming, but if you take a minute to step back and reflect on these problems, it can provide the space to see what you did right. And finally, number 10, recognize leadership development as an ongoing practice. Strategists have the humility and intelligence to realize that their learning and development is never done, however experienced they may be. They admit that they are vulnerable and don't have all the answers. Again, good stuff there from the Strategy Plus Business website. That's an article titled 10 Principles of Strategic Leadership. And this week, I wanted to explore some of those principles a little bit more deeply. And here to help me do that this week is my guest. She is Jennifer Elder. Jennifer is a thought leader. She's a trainer, a business coach who's dedicated to the concept of business transformation. And she offers some programs through the Business Learning Institute about all this stuff. And this week, we're gonna talk about all of that, right? Especially from a corporate finance perspective. Bringing corporate finance into the conversation this week, how finance is taking on a more strategic role in most organizations, what characteristics set strategic leaders apart from the rest of the pack, how finance's role will continue to evolve, and of course, how the pandemic is impacting all of this stuff. Just a really good talk this week about the evolving issue that's going to continue to evolve in corporate finance. Here is my conversation with Jennifer Elder. Hello, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
I guess the first thing I want to know is to tell me a little bit about the past year for you. I think, if I remember right, you were the first person I talked to for the podcast in kind of a post-pandemic world. Right after things started locking down, and you and I talked a little bit about mindsets going into a crisis like this, so that was gosh, that was a year ago now. you were a bit of a road warrior, right? In your pre-pandemic life. I'm curious how the past year has been for you, because I know some people, some business travelers who say the past year has been great, right? They don't have to go anywhere. They don't have to see anybody. And then I know others who are 180 degrees in the opposite direction. Their identity is kind of tied to their frequent flyer numbers, and they're almost in mourning right now. So I'm just kind of curious where you kind of fall in that range.
Well, you're right. Pre-pandemic, I was a road warrior 40 plus weeks a year. And one of the things I used to say, I love to travel. Mm-hmm. When the pandemic hit and suddenly didn't travel for 7 months, between March 1st was my last flight. When the pandemic hit, I did one flight in October. And what I discovered was, I think I tolerate travel more than I love it.
Yeah.
The plane, the getting to the airport, I call it all the hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait. Yep. I don't miss any of that. What I do miss is those, strangely enough, it's the little times that you connect with people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're sitting at a gate and you have a 5-minute conversation, or the conversation with somebody sitting next to you on the plane,
yeah,
or a conversation at a client. I miss those.
Yeah. Yeah, I know exactly how what you're talking about. My wife and I were talking about this just the other night. We both traveled, not nearly as much as you do, but quite frequently. And, you know, like a lot of frequent travelers, we like to complain about travel and all that stuff. And then we were sitting on the couch the other day, and we both were talking about this, and we almost said simultaneously, like, you know what? I miss traveling. I want to like get out. It's like, this house is, I'm sick of this house. Let me out and do something, you know? So it's been kind of a weird year in that respect.
I think I've come around to that as well, where I realized that what I miss is variety.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, while I live in Northern New Hampshire in the middle of the White Mountain National Forest, it's beautiful. I love being here, but I also love seeing other places.
Yeah.
And what it's like in different parts of the country, the globe. And I do miss that.
I was really looking forward to 2020. I had trips scheduled to like Idaho. I'd never been to Idaho before. So I was like, you know, stuff like that. Just really excited about seeing new places, and none of that got to happen. So someday. In the meantime, I want to talk a little bit with you about one of the things that you speak with folks quite frequently about, and that's the changing kind of strategic role of finance professionals, because it is changing, right? I mean, I heard someone describe it recently as kind of like finance pros having moved from being navigators for their businesses to really being more of co-pilots, right? And I'm curious what you think. What's brought that change on? I mean, how do you see that?
Well, I think it's been evolving over time, but I think the pandemic accelerated it. Pandemic absolutely accelerated our use of technology.
Yep.
And IT and accounting tends to go together. So yeah. I think accountants having to adjust to the pandemic, they had to learn to use more of their IT and suddenly start discovering that, wait, we have the keys to the kingdom. Even if we're not in the office, we can see everything that's going on by looking at the data.
Right.
And I think with, again, lots of people working from home, leaders in organizations realized that they lost a lot of information that they were getting when they were interacting with people every day. So all of a sudden, the department heads, the C-suite, they don't have the information that they need to make decisions. And the accountants are going, oh, guess what I have? I've got the information for you.
Right.
And so they're starting to realize that the C-suite, that the CFOs, the finance department can be that partner on strategy. And CFOs, finance people are really good at planning and doing forecasting. So COVID suddenly changed how we do planning, because pre-pandemic planning was often, well, let's think about best case, worst case, and then there's reality in the middle. Mm-hmm. But those were three variations on a theme, on a scale. But then the pandemic hit, and all of a sudden that kind of got blown out of the water. And then it was, well, what happens if this happens? Mm-hmm. And what if that happens? And suddenly we had to get into scenario planning.
More like, yeah. So suddenly we're dealing with a crisis, and we're all of a sudden starting to think more along those lines, right?
It's yes. Yeah. And so the finance people are good at putting projections together pretty quickly. So they say, well, give me that scenario. I'll figure out what it might look like. Oh, well, let's do this scenario. Let's see what that would look like. So I think people are discovering that finance is more than history. It's more than looking in the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
And we can help. I like to think of the finance department as an organization's GPS.
Oh, that's a good way of looking at it. Yeah.
The CEO can give you the destination. Mm-hmm. So you input your destination in your GPS. Your finance department can help you map out the route, figure out what's the fastest route to get there, track your progress, just like a GPS does.
Yep.
Warn you if there are obstacles. You know, the GPS comes on and says there's an object in the road, or there's construction, or there's regulation. There's a police officer ahead. And your finance department can do that for your strategic planning.
Yeah, that's a really interesting analogy. I like that a lot. And you know, I think a lot of people that I speak to nowadays, folks supposedly in the know, talk a lot about strategic leadership or strategic thinking or, you know, critical thinking. And I think a lot of folks talk about these things without really knowing what they are, right? I mean, how would you define that concept, strategic thinking, strategic leadership? What does that mean to you?
Well, I can describe some characteristics that I like to talk about with strategic thinking is that Perfect. First, you have to be curious. Mm-hmm. Strategic thinkers are broad-based thinkers. They're willing to look around and be curious. What's that going on? They are very aware of changes in the environment. They pay attention to trends, but they're always looking for it. Another characteristic would be flexibility. They're not adamant about we have to do it this way. Mm-hmm. If the world changes, well, I have to change what I'm doing. Strategic thinkers, also you use the phrase, are critical thinkers, which for me goes back to the concept of debate. And unfortunately, in kind of the environment we're living in, we seem to have gone from it's okay to have a discussion and then it becomes an argument.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the middle, there's the ability to debate. You and I can take different perspectives and explain why we think our perspective is good. And I should be able to listen to that, think about whether I agree with you or not. And if I find the parts of what you say that I agree with, because very rarely are people 180 degrees out.
Yeah.
Let me find where there's the commonality. And then let me be able to point out what my concerns are. And let's debate back and forth. We become smarter people if we listen to other people's perspectives.
That's a really great way of looking at that. And something that a lot of us struggle with, and very few people do really, really well, is have that ability to, yeah, you know, I may believe what I believe, but, you know, a critical thinker will own those beliefs, but also at the same time, be able to see and understand someone who believes the opposite of what I'm talking about, right? And hold those two kind of thoughts together at the same time and see the good and the bad of both simultaneously. And that's mm-hmm. that's a skill that I think that very few people have these days.
Well, we used to teach debate in high school.
Mm-hmm.
There were debate teams. In college, you could sometimes choose to take a communication class that might involve some debate. But somehow, I think with social media, we've gone down this path of we have to agree with people 100% or you're canceled.
Yeah.
We need, I think in organizations, it's important to elevate that concept of debate because it makes us all stronger.
Yeah.
And as a leader in an organization, I know I'm not right 100% of the time.
Right.
And I don't want people to go, yes, Jen, yes, Jen. because I know I have blind spots. I need people who are willing to challenge me and say, have you thought about?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's slightly different than saying, you're an idiot. Why didn't you think about this?
Right, right, right.
And that's where the nuance of debate comes in, is that we can disagree without being disagreeable.
It's like, I mean, to use your word, it's not an argument. It's a conversation almost, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great way of looking at it. So what are some others, other characteristics of these strategic leaders that you like to talk about?
Strategic leaders are always lifelong learners.
Mm-hmm.
They know that the world is changing. They're willing to change with it. A strategic thinker also knows that not only do they not know it all, but they can't do it all.
Mm-hmm.
They surround themselves with people who have different skills from themselves.
Yep.
And there's actually a struggle in there because we like people who are just like us. But if you hire a team that is 100% just like you, they have the same blind spots that you do.
Right. Or you get into you fall into that trap that a lot of people end up falling into, which is nobody can do it as well as me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm just going to do it. Right. And I don't need anybody else. And that's almost as bad.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Steve Jobs, whether you like Apple or not, Steve Jobs is a great example of someone who learned. When he first started Apple, he was one of those that said, I know how to do it the right way. Everybody else is wrong. And as Apple grew, that's not a great way of leading a larger company. So he got fired from his own company. He went to Pixar. And at Pixar, he learned not only how to tell a story, but he also learned how to surround himself with a team.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he came back to Apple, Jobs was a figurehead when he came back because he was a great presenter, not a nice person to work for. So he surrounded himself with a team mm-hmm. that could deal with his personality, but they had a different set of skills.
Yep.
So he became a different leader when he came back the second time and was twice as successful when he came back.
And that requires an ability to let things go. And again, I think that's a skill that it's admirable and one that very few people seem to possess. It's that, all right, you take that and run with it. Delegation, which is hugely important. And again, it's one of those things that it's hard for people to kind of let go of that vine, right? And because there's an ownership feel to it.
The nice thing is when you delegate, that frees you up to do what you're best at.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when I teach about delegation, I tell people, think about the things that you procrastinate on. The things that are on your to-do list and you go, oh, please, I don't want to do that. You keep pushing it off and pushing it off. It's probably because you're not great at it. Right. You have to work at it. Those are probably the things that you could delegate to somebody else who's got that skill as a strength. And then that frees you up to do the things that you can really add value with.
Oh, and that's where our organizations really need us to be operating most of the time, is in those areas where, you know, we're really good at what we do and we like doing it. That's probably where should be spending most of our time. And yet it seems like too many of us, like you were saying, it seems like the business world goes to that place to die, right? Where we're good at something, but we don't like it. And we've just gotten good at it from doing it over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Another, I think, very really critical element for strategic leaders right now is, especially now where we're not all in the office, is strategic leaders know how to stay connected throughout their organization. They figure out ways to communicate not just with their direct reports, but people several levels down. For some people, depending on the size of the organization, that might used to have been what I call management by walking around. Mm-hmm. Just taking the time to go chat with people and chat with somebody who is working in your manufacturing area, somebody who's working in the warehouse, somebody who's working in customer service. So you just stay on the pulse of every department. In larger organizations, that may mean having a town hall. And people used to do that live. Now it's really more important that you take that time, because I think after this pandemic has just keep, it's the gift that won't stop giving. And it goes on. We're all tired of it. And even the introverts are starting to say, I feel alone. So when a leader takes the time to reach out, it really tells your employees, you matter to me. I'm taking time out of my day to meet with you. It doesn't have to be one-on-one. It could be groups of people. It could be a virtual town hall. But you're taking the time to talk to people and answer their questions. I think that's very important right now.
That's a really great point. I forget who it was. Maybe Tom Peters talked about, I think he talked about that notion of leadership by walking around as well. But at one point he said that leaders ought to be thinking about, you know, maybe a weekly lunch with someone from, and this applies to all of us, someone from another department that you're not familiar with, right? If you work in finance, you're having lunch this week with someone from HR or, you know, whatever the case may be. But the point is to get out of your comfort zone there and just go talk to somebody in the organization that they're doing something that you don't know a whole lot about. So it's not just connecting with other people, but also learning more about the organization as a whole.
I just heard recently about one company and I can't think of their name. They thought it was so important. They actually changed the layout of their building to put the restrooms in the center of the building.
Oh, there you go.
So that meant people from all different departments would have to come in and meet each other.
That's a really great idea.
And they did that. This is during the pandemic, they did that because they were reorganizing their office to create more space between people so we could do social distancing at the workplace. But they said, you know what? We still want people to stay connected. So put the restrooms right in the middle so that people from different departments would in fact run into each other. Another organization I know of, every couple of years, they put on what they call a department fair. So they have a huge ballroom and each department sets up a table. And all the new employees over the last 2 years come to this department fair, and their mission is to walk around and learn about each department in the organization and what they do and why they're important to the firm as a whole. I thought that was a really creative idea.
Great idea. It's almost like a little career fair, but
yes,
right in your office. Yeah. Those are great ideas. Fantastic. Well, what else are we missing in terms of like strategic leadership? Other characteristics or skill sets that you think apply there?
One of the other things that I think is really important is, again, sort of going back to the idea that strategic leaders know they don't know it all. And I love the phrase, together is better. And we can apply that with our employees. If you're looking for some new ideas, you don't have to think of it on your own. Ask your employees, what did they think you could do, what you should do? Where are some new opportunities? You hired people because you thought that they had skills and qualities you wanted. Take advantage of it. Years ago, there Patrick O'Neill, when he became the CEO of Alcoa, his first meeting with the analysts, they said, so what are you predicting for revenue? He said, don't know, don't care. He said, what I am focused on is safety. Alcoa at that point in time had way too many people dying on the job because manufacturing aluminum is not a safe thing to do. So he said, we're going to focus on safety 100%. And they really opened up the lines of communication with all of their employees and said, we want all your recommendations on safety. They developed a fabulous safety record as a result. They took every idea that employees had. And the reason I tell this story is because what they discovered was that their earnings went through the roof. Because when employees found they were being listened to for safety ideas, they said, well, you're listening to me. What if I have an idea on something else?
Right.
And the employees just started bringing all these other ideas and management was listening. And so they started implementing ideas that came from the employees. Now, when they have too many times, people will, you know, they have the dreaded suggestion box where ideas go to die. But if you're going to survey your employees and say, what do you think we should do? You need to implement something right away to demonstrate that you're listening and you're taking it seriously. Even better, what if you compensate employees based on the idea? One organization, they will give their employees 10% of the revenue or savings after 1 year. So the company's already made money off of the idea, and then they pay 10% to the employee. Now they have the, there is a caveat in there. The employee has to stay for another year. But once people start knowing, A, they're listening, and B, it's win-win, you start getting these fabulous ideas. And having been in the C-suite as a CFO, you're not connected to everybody. So you don't see all the ideas all the time. So being able to collect those ideas and implement them, and it just creates such a culture of creativeness.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, not only are they, you know, getting paid for really cool ideas, but they're getting to work on something that they feel is purposeful, right?
And Google and Microsoft both, they, and Apple probably does the same thing. They set aside a day, I believe it's a day a month, where employees can take a day to work on anything that they want to with any group of people they want to. That's right. They encourage cross collaboration, and people aren't having to do this outside of work. It's just, this is the day where it's creativity day.
Yeah. It's a great idea. Oh my gosh, so many good ideas there. You know, what I guess I'm curious, we've talked a lot of, you know, about a lot of different characteristics of these kind of future focused strategic leaders. What skills do you, you know, more than any other, what skills do you think that kind of future ready leaders need to be working on mastering now? What's going to give them the most bang for their buck in this area, do you think?
I think there are a couple of things they need to work on. One is communication skills. You need to be able to have a conversation with somebody without belittling somebody or without attacking them. Be able to have that debate without it getting personal. You also have to be able to condense your ideas and say things clearly so that somebody else will understand. So I think those communication skills are really important. I think asking questions is also really important. I like to call that leadership by five-year-old. Ask why and why not?
Right.
Or another favorite variation is, how could we? Somebody says, no, we can't do that. Why not may seem a little accusatory, but if I say, well, how, if we could, how could we? And that sort of frees people from the thinking that it's not possible. And then suddenly ideas start to pop up. And as you get a little creative, you may find out that you actually have come up with a solution to one of your barriers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. So, it's amazing what kind of solutions you can come to just simply by rephrasing the question. And and asking it in instead of a negative light or a you know, a yes or no type of question, just rephrasing it in a way that that kind of solicits information from the other. And really, not only are they answering it in a different way, but maybe opening themselves up to further the conversation, right? And which which the more you can exchange ideas, the closer you get to agreement, I guess.
And my dad gave me a great phrase that I probably use every single week, is to start off a question with, help me understand. Good for a couple of reasons. One, I use the word help right up front. Humans seem to be hardwired to respond to the word help. We lean in instantly. And secondly, instead of saying, I don't understand you, which sounds like it's your problem, if I say, help me understand this idea, I make it my problem. So it diffuses the discussion a little bit, you know, takes it away from being an argument. So that's why I think the communication is key. And the thing I think that is the skill that everybody should be looking at right now, hands down, absolutely crucial, is one that Dan Burris talks about all the time. It's look to the future. Mm-hmm. What's happening now that could have an effect on you? Look to the future, pay attention to trends, and in particular, who's your future customer? Start thinking about how you're going to service that future customer right now. Not only do we have a huge transition due to the pandemic also changed people's values. Mm-hmm. When your world turns upside down, you rethink things that were important or not important to you. And at the same time, we now have baby boomers probably have, they're still in a lot of leadership roles, but probably less than 5 years.
Right.
And we will have shifted 100%. The Gen Y is already the largest generation in the workplace.
Yeah.
They only have about 5 years before it's Gen Z.
No.
And the values between, and I know I jumped over Gen X, but that's because they're small.
Yeah, I'm a Gen Xer, and believe me, we're used to it. So don't worry.
So the baby boomers had one set of values, Gen Y has another, and Gen Z has yet a third. And mm-hmm. So leaders need to start thinking about how do I service the customers I have currently, but how am I going to service the ones that are coming down the pike?
Yeah. Boy, this you know, we started off talking about kind of the evolving role of finance, and then we got into skill sets for strategic leaders. I kind of want to circle back to finance here for a second. I'm kind of curious what you see as how the finance role is going to continue to evolve. I mean, it's evolved so much today, and as you said, a lot of the changes that we've seen are being accelerated by this pandemic and all that comes with it. Where do you see it going from here?
Well, I think a big change in focus is sort of a combination of the elevation of the finance department and this future focus. And that will be a much stronger emphasis on risk management. Mm-hmm. How do we protect the organization? I believe that success is really a two-part formula. It's half about you moving forward. The other half is making sure you don't slide backward.
Yeah.
And so paying attention to those things that are out there that could come out to bite you. We need to be aware of those. So risk management has always been part of the finance department. We have controls in place to prevent bad things from happening. We also want to start looking at what are those potential future bad things that could be happening. And the flip side of that is, where's the opportunity in there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because something can't, when there's with challenges there, the flip side of it is opportunity.
Yeah. And it might've been Tom Hood, or maybe he got it from somebody else, but he always liked to say that, you know, a challenge is just a frustrated opportunity, right? It's there's always something embedded in there. And the, you know, this pandemic's a perfect example of that, you know, why we need to be focused on this type of risk management mindset going forward. I mean, I think very few of us a year ago were even thinking about something like this and what kind of risks that might bring to our organizations. And yet here we are. So a great example of why that's important.
Yeah, the other thing I think finance can help with is, you know, again, I'll go back to that GPS example. If the CEO tells you, or the board of directors says, this is where we want to end up, the finance department can help figure out different paths to get there. So you might start down a path, which we did in 2020. We started down the path in 2020, and then March hit. And all of a sudden, the world changed on us. Well, yeah. Finance can say, okay, we still have our big goal of what we want to get to. We now need to figure out a different way of getting there. So that's where the scenario planning starts to come in, is what's going to be the most effective path. Just like a GPS, if you look up on Google Maps, where do I want to end up? Google Maps is going to give you a couple of different options.
Right.
And you can choose. I want fewer highways. I don't want tolls.
Something, you know, more scenic. Right. Yeah, exactly. That's a great way of looking at it. While we're talking about paths, I mean, what kind of advice might you give somebody who's just started, you know, down this type of career path in finance and is looking to make a go of it for the long haul? I mean, where should they be focusing their energies first?
Oh, let's see. First off, if somebody is entering the profession of accounting or finance, smart. It's a fabulous career because there are so many different options open to you.
Yeah.
Public accounting, finance, government, education. If you go into finance, if you're working for a hotel and you don't like that, you can go work for a construction company. You can find different ways of developing your career. So I think there's so much opportunity. I'm so blessed to have, I didn't go into this by choice. I fell into it and I'm so happy that I did.
Yeah.
But for anyone entering down this path, I think I'm going to go back to what I said before, which is you have to learn to communicate.
Yeah.
People who tend to go into finance, yes, we like numbers. Now, not necessarily, you know, people will say, you're a CPA, you're good at math. No, I'm not. I had to do math. I need a calculator or my cell phone, right. You know, or an Excel spreadsheet. But I do like numbers, and numbers is a foreign language. And most people, you know, when they say a person is good, you know, CPA is good at math, it's not really that we're good at math. It's that the average person is that bad at math. And they're frightened by it.
Yeah.
So the minute we start explaining numbers, we love them. So we are quick to show someone a full spreadsheet and their eyes explode. And they're like, oh my God, I don't even know where to look. And now I don't want to look stupid. So people go quiet.
Right.
And they won't ask questions. And then they really don't understand what you're talking about. So it is so important to learn not only how to analyze the data, but you've got to be able to explain it in a way that the other person can understand it and use it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our product in finance is data. We have to present that product in a way that someone else can use it.
Yeah, that's a great, I mean, you know, as you said, numbers, finance, it's a foreign language to most people, right? Our job is to translate it into a language that they speak so that they can understand and put it to use.
Well, I can give you a silly example.
Yeah.
One company I work for, my VP of sales and the VP of manufacturing really did not speak to each other. They did not personally like each other. Mm-hmm. I produced reports and I would send them out so that they had the information. Both of them had the information they needed. I was sort of this intermediary. One day I said, you know what? I wonder if either one of them reads what I'm sending.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to see the ops guy and I said, Anthony, you know, I send out this report. I usually send out the report. I said, I'm sorry, I forgot. And, you know, this is not about you. This is about me. But I noticed you didn't call me. So I'm wondering if this report is really useful to you. And it kind of, I was so tentative and I wanted to make sure that, you know, I wasn't attacking him. But I said, so what do you really need? And he said, you know what? No, I don't understand your report. What I need to know is what is sales working on? Because what I hate is when sales lands a big deal and suddenly I don't have the inventory and now I'm the bad guy because we're not delivering on schedule.
Mm-hmm.
I said, perfect. I will get you a report that says, what is sales working on? I went back to my office. I changed the title of my report. That's all I changed. Previously, it had been called sales pipeline. Anthony had no idea what that meant.
Right.
And so rather than look any further, he just said, I don't understand it. I'm not going to look. I changed the title. That was it. I changed it to literally what sales is working on. Anthony called me 5 minutes later going, Jen, thank you. This is exactly what I needed. It was all I could do not to laugh. But
it was,
you know, really, that was my fault.
Yeah.
I'm speaking a language he doesn't understand. So it wasn't, I did not fault Anthony at all. I looked at it, that was my error. So I really think in finance, that's really something we have to think about is how do we communicate in a way that people will understand it and don't feel uncomfortable raising their hand and going, I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody likes to feel stupid.
Exactly. And it's a skill. It's not an easy one. You know, clarity, brevity. I'm a big fan of the phrase less is more, especially mm-hmm. when it comes to like writing and communication. And that takes a lot of work, right? Sometimes it takes twice as long to write something short and clear as it does the writing something that's like four times as long, right? So it's a great skill to have, and people who can do that and do it really well, they're leadership materials, right? Mm-hmm. If they can tell that story and lead others down that road and make them understand, that's great stuff.
And you can practice that skill.
Yeah.
You don't have to wait until you're in a leadership role. You can practice it by, in finance, we're all preparing data. So prepare the data that you normally give to someone who would understand it. Take that to one of your friends or somebody else in the organization and say, can you read this and tell me what you think?
That's a great idea. Yeah.
Somebody who doesn't know what you're talking about. Warren Buffett, when he's getting ready for his analyst meeting, he prepares it for his sisters that he says are smart people, but they don't know anything about finance.
Mm-hmm.
And so he will run his presentation by them and see what they didn't understand, what he needed to clarify, what he could drop out because they just felt like it was too much. So find somebody that you can run something by and say, does this make sense?
It's that curse of knowledge, right? It's such an easy trap to fall into when we live in this world. We automatically think that everybody understands what we're talking about, and it's often the opposite. And mm-hmm. that's a great, that you know, everybody needs a fresh pair of eyes. Everybody needs an editor.
Right? Yes, exactly.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And I think it's important to remember that you don't have to put everything on one page. Right. If you're preparing a written report, preparing a spreadsheet, giving a presentation, just put in the important numbers. If somebody has questions, they will follow up with you about the question, but give them the executive summary first.
There you go. That's a great way of looking at it. How's the pandemic changed your world, Jennifer? I mean, what's your professional world going to look like on the other side of this thing?
My world shifted from 40 some odd weeks on a plane to 40 weeks in front of a screen and a camera and lights and all of that.
So you're still doing what you do. It's just the platform's a little bit different.
Yes. So I had to think about what do my customers need? What do they want and adjust? And going forward, I still have that same question. What are my customers going to want when we can get back together? Not everybody is going to want to be in a room. There are people who have lost friends and family to COVID, and it's going to take them a while before they feel comfortable being at a conference or in a meeting. So for me, how can I address the needs of my current customers and my future customers? How do I present that hybrid type of presentation that meets the needs of both? So I'm living what I'm suggesting other people have to do.
I was just going to say, sounds like a great question that we all should be asking ourselves right about now. So mm-hmm. on that note, I think that's a great way to end it. Jennifer, thank you so much for your time, for your insights. This has been a great conversation, and I appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.
It's always a pleasure, Bill. Thank you so much.
Good stuff there. My thanks to Jennifer Elder for that conversation. Jennifer is a thought leader, a trainer, a business coach who's dedicated to the concept of business transformation. You can learn much more by visiting jenniferelder.com. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute, the BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework. Outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. And we're talking about strategic aptitudes here that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPA. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that is all I got, gang. Have a great week. We will talk to you soon.